Today, markets under stress. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, with my latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined again by Tony Lecantro from Alto Capital. Hello, Tony.
Good evening, Martin. We're just saying this is unprecedented times we're living in.
Yeah, well, I've lived through four crashes, and there are some things about this one which are absolutely unique. And I thought there'll be no better person to speak with than yourself, because you are right there in the front line. And, you know, you really are in the middle of it, aren't you?
Yeah, I was actually thinking, I mentioned in one interview about going back to the 70s. And I'm a bit of a deep thinker. And I was thinking, what about if we had a life minus all the pompous events people hate going to? And guess what? We've got it. So it's pretty much, we're going to get back to family values. We're not going to go out. Yeah, let's face it, a lot of events we go to, we don't enjoy. We can't wait to go home. Obviously, I'm just wrapped the Hillsong got their final conference in. So there's a few thousand people at Hillsong. So all the cults are probably doing all right. I mean, I don't care. Mass gathering starts Monday. Go figure. I won't say any more than that. But no, there's no textbook to cover. This is like flying a new plane without a manual.
Yep.
So all I can do for your viewers is tell it how it is. And I'm also going to provide some content. I don't think many other people can. It might be a little bit complex, but markets really are simple. Wall Street makes it difficult. People in Australia make it sound difficult to sell your bullshit packages, to learn how to trade. And all you're doing is effectively gambling red or black. So let's get into it.
Well, yes, very good. And look, the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of bullshit being spoken all over the place, right? And there's a lot of people with lots of pretty charts and things. But let me just call out a couple of things, right? So the US markets now are back to where they were at their peak back in 2007 before the crash then, right? So they went down and they've gone up. And now they're back to there, right? And if you look at the Japanese market or the European markets, it's 22 years back to where they were. So in other words, there's been no real progress at the moment. Now, okay, we're looking at probably, you know, a significant dip, but also the futures are all over the place. So some are forecasting significant rises over the next couple of days, others more falls. So I'm not sure that anybody really knows what on earth is going on. And my perspective, Tony, don't know what yours is, that the virus is a catalyst to a whole bunch of market instability that was already there. Because I think things were very highly valued, particularly if you look at equities, for example. And in a way, because the markets cannot assess the impact of what the virus is going to be, other than the R word is now very much being spoken about, people are panicking. So very interesting times.
I hate to use the term black swan. This was a black swan. And this is the prick, the pin, no one saw coming. I always thought that to crack the US stock market, you'd need the San Andreas fault to give way, and you'd have a major Californian earthquake. That's coming at some point, whether it's or not during our lifetime. So I see, based on the economy, everything's shut down. Retail was rooted in Australia anyway. All these small restaurants, businesses, there's no people going, they need to survive at least a year when there's talk about 18 months to a vaccine. And then you've got to have 6 months to rebuild confidence. I mean, one example, Flight Centre, shutting 100 stores, telling staff to go back to 4 days a week or less. That's a business I think that will survive, but in a much leaner form. And this is a bad way of putting what's happening in the world, Martin, but we are trimming the fat in the world, all the excess consumerism, all these events, fireworks, events, light shows that cost millions of dollars. It's all got to go, and suddenly life's back to simplicity. Now, my view of the market is I'd like to see the Dow Jones below 20,000 points. I want 20,000 points to become the next ceiling. Once this volatility ends, I believe we're in a bear market. Absolutely. Our market's going to go back below 5,000 points. When Westpac got to about $19, I maintain the view that our bank stocks can halve again, because our bank stocks since 2014, December, have lost over 50% in value. Now, I see that the US market, even with this correction, based on, I think it was Shiller, is still saying 30 to 40% overvalued. Now, let's get this out of the way. Viewers probably saw, their safe haven gold got smashed. Gold has maintained its purpose because in a liquidity event, you sell it. Traders, investors sell whatever they can, and they obviously smashed Bitcoin. I think crypto, apart from a couple of them, is the biggest load of crap ever. And it's something that doesn't have profits. Now, it doesn't have value, and you can't have a profit warning on something that has no value. So it'll trade on sentiment. But I think the US market, even despite this nasty correction, remains massively overpriced. But this isn't going to stop me finding companies that become bigger ones. A bear market, you could have 1,000 points up, 800 down. So you have violent upside rallies in bear markets. I see the same for the Australian market. Now, people are saying our market was down 8% on Friday. I call it an FFD. It's called a fundamental free day, where people just sell anything. Anything, doesn't matter what price. If someone bids lower, they'll hit them. And what's happening, I'm going to stick to that, the basis of fundamentals, but I mean, this is going to remove a lot of excess in the market. And I actually think over the medium term, we're going to see some nasty things happen, and the knock-on effects cannot be underestimated.
Well, this is the second order. Now, you know, there are two observations. The first is, if you look at the rate of fall for the US market, for example, this was quicker than the last couple. So look at Lehman and look at the previous one, right? So the drop already is more precipitous, right?
I actually lost my train of thought there. What happened was, I was watching the US futures live, and they were still dropping when our market turned around. So what I believe happened was, it was worded that the RBA were pouring $8.8 billion into the banking sector. It had nothing to do with the US, because I was watching both. At one stage, the US futures were still down 600, and we were rallying furiously. So you get a bit of short covering. A lot of it's high-frequency computer trading. So our market actually took a life of its own, and then the US obviously turned positive.
Yeah, and the US, of course, reacted then to what Trump said late on Friday with regard to the stimulus packages in the US and those sorts of things. I think the computer trading stuff is something that people need to understand, right? Because it is a huge force in the marketplace. And I guess it's got two faces. The first face is the index funds. So as the indexes move up and down, they have to actually follow the index because they're tracking the index. And then you've got other computer programs looking for, you know, unique opportunities and trying to position, right? But it's a huge volume, very sensitive to movements, and it amplifies everything that's going on.
Well, that was one of the main causes of the 87 crash. And Michael Burry from The Big Short, who found the US market holes and made all that money, he then came out and said passive investing and EFTs are the biggest bubble since the US housing bubble. And guess what? He's spot on. And he was saying that the only way that he's looking now is stock picking, because after The Big Short, he went into water. He's since sold a lot of his water investments, and he's now into stock picking.
Tony, one of the things that I think people need to think about is, how come that on one day a stock can be worth X, and the next day the stock can be worth X minus a really big number, right? Because, you know, that tells you that stock values are not based purely on fundamentals, doesn't it?
Totally driven at the moment on sentiment, fear, greed, and stupidity, and the hunt for liquidity anywhere. What I've noticed is that margin calls in Australia amongst retail investors were less prominent than they were during the GFC. Because since the GFC, margin lending and broker holidays to Hawaii, those numbers have fallen off a cliff. So instead of leveraging into blue chip shares, the Australian public is leveraged into property at ridiculous valuations.
Yeah. And of course, the interesting question there is, we've seen the falls on the markets. you know, property is very overvalued. We know that, overvalued probably by 40% relative to long-term averages. And so the obvious, you know, observation is there's no reason why gravity wouldn't work on property too.
Well, we've seen how, you look at the Dow Jones, it was tiptoeing through the tulips. The Dow Jones index looked like the CoreLogic index. Every day it goes green. I mean, are the people that write these things colorblind? And I'm thinking, where's the volatility? This is rubbish. But it's interesting. No, because what I'm saying is, if someone comes to your home open and offers you 50, 100 grand less, if you don't take it, the negative equity figure could spiral to 300 plus, and then you're prone to currency movements, bank interest rates, cash rates, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm saying is, if your house is on the market for 900, 60 Ks out of Sydney, someone offers you 850, I'd certainly take that bid, because sooner rather than later, as like some of the stocks, that bid might drop to 600, and there's no buyers, and especially when home opens are going to see less people going there due to this virus. It's the way I see it is, people have got a couple of weeks to cash in their lotto tickets, then it expires.
Mm. Yeah, well, you said, I know previously, if you're going to panic early. I think it's absolutely true, because, yeah, all my modelling is suggesting that we are going to see home prices down rather than up ahead, despite, of course, the public's confidence in ScoMo and, you know, they'll always support property. Gravity ultimately wins, I think.
I think stimulus, I've got an example. It's like throwing feathers at a cyclone. I mean, if people... It's all about confidence. You can hand someone $750, right? The welfare class are going to go out and play pokies, stock up on Long Beach 50s and a slab of VB. Why not give everyone $750? Because it's those that will go to Myer, will go out to restaurants and spend that money. But when fear is rife, people are going to start... Now, the biggest issue is unemployment. Mm. So you've got people in service industries petrified of losing their jobs. People are going to be less inclined to use rideshare. So rideshare drivers, instead of earning $8 an hour, they'll earn $4 an hour. Once you've got insecurity and fear handing people, no amount of money is going to cause them to go out and buy stuff they don't need. So stimulus at the moment, give everyone money or wait. My view, Martin.
Yeah, well, it's clear to me that the momentum in the retail sector, as you said earlier, will continue to weaken. And, you know, we have to expect more clampdowns, less people willing and able to move around. Probably the government will actually tighten like, you know, they have done in some European countries now as well. So people are not going to be able or willing to spend. And by the way, the other thing is that a lot of goods in the shops aren't there now because the supply chains are broken as well. So that's something else to bear in mind. So, yeah, I have this theory that giving people cash at the moment probably won't do a huge amount. They might go out and buy some more loo rolls. But other than that, not sure it's going to really help.
I think... It might be hoarded. Like, I mean, I've seen stories of people with 17,000 bottles of hand sanitizer who are then trying to take their toilet paper back to Woolworths, and they said, no, wait a minute. So if you're staring at hundreds of thousands of dollars in negative equity, you're struggling to pay your bills, $750 isn't going to go very far, and you're not going to go out and spend it just as a token to keep the economy going. I think... give everyone the money, but not yet, because at the moment we don't know how exponentially this thing's going to grow. I see ScoMo's just bought in the 14-day self-isolation.
Yep.
Cases here have been relatively contained, but only takes a couple of people and then it's off to the races. And I don't think this can be adequately contained if you look at Spain and France especially, and Italy, which has been completely shut down, completely in lockdown.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and there's one other point I just wanted to come to. You know, you mentioned unemployment a little earlier on. There's a really interesting parallel now to look at between home prices in Western Australia and home prices down the East Coast, right? Now, in Western Australia, they're down 21% from peak. Down the East Coast, if you agree with the CoreLogic stuff, they've gone up. But the big difference is actually the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate has been consistently high in the West, And that's, in my view, one of the main reasons why prices have dropped, whereas in the East, unemployment has been quite a lot lower. And I think there's a very clear line of argument that says that if unemployment starts to rise, as it may well, for all the reasons we've discussed, that will be another reason why we expect property prices to fall. So in a way, the West could be a leading indicator of what we're going to see down the East Coast.
I agree with that. And the fear of losing one's job is similar to losing one's job in terms of their spending power, how they're going to live their lives. They're just going to bunker down, literally, in their own... Everyone's going to get cabin fever. And interestingly, in the West, it was the supply of debt and speculation that this mining boom would go on forever. I went and bought a desk off Gumtree. I drove 30 kilometres into Wanneroo tapping area to buy a desk. I don't need to pay full price, but I saw these beautiful new estates. And those areas, as per your figures, are high in mortgage stress, yet I haven't seen a lot of for sale signs yet. So that's, we've still got downside here in Perth. We do have a rental crisis looming of all things. Vacancy rates dropped from 7% to 2.2%. And there was an example of a unit 25 kilometres outside the city that got 140 applications.
Wow.
So we're going back to that crisis of 2006. So I think it's tightening up in Perth, but mortgage stress and unemployment would indicate we've still got some downside. But Jesus, I wouldn't be want to be paying 12 times earnings in Sydney, for God's sake.
Mm,
and that's ridiculous. And that's going to be, people say, well, the safe haven of property, which is priced like Japanese stocks in 1989, and we know what happened there.
Yeah, there are no safe havens in property, I don't think. Now, the last thing I wanted to touch on today, Tony, was small caps, right? Which is your speciality. And I haven't really been following what's happened to the small caps. We know that some of them are fairly illiquid. Yeah. So how's that been playing out?
Yeah, I'm actually, every correction I get, I relax a lot more. Basically what happens is I know the type of people that hold my stocks. Like, just say a company like Exafarm, which I'll disclose I'm a top four shareholder. They had some great news that exosomes could be a new class of medicine that helps bladder control and erectile dysfunction. That stock ran for 39 cents. Now, once you see sellers move in and buyers step back, it's now 17 to 21. But even though the stock's halved, he's made three great announcements. And I still think it's a two-year plan. And it's a bit like Sally's No More Gaps. Once some confidence returns, the cheap stock under 30 cents will get hoovered up. Same thing with my cholesterol and TBI, which is traumatic brain injury stock, Narada. It's 13 to 16. I continue to buy. I actually said on Friday to the office, I'm going to go out and buy that stock at its all-time low. I only got some at 12.5. But to me, the path to a 10-bagger is much easier from 12 cents and 20 because the stock has 80 cents less to travel, and these things have been turned upside down in 2 weeks. So at the moment, I stick completely to the script of buy right, buy low, and sit tight because all these companies have fantastic news. People might come and say I'm a snake oil salesman, but big companies start out as even Kukulis. Someone sent me a tweet saying, when I said the Australian economy was as strong as a hotel ironing board, he called me a snake oil salesman. So, but this is what I do. I'm there to make my clients rich, a lot of money through finding small companies. But I say to them, if you can't hold through this market turbulence, you're never going to make it. And you can't time this. No one knew this was coming. I mean, we always thought there could be something out of left field, a black swan, but no one saw this. And we thought that this may be contained and it's just gone exponential. So I still see companies probably coming out with a coronavirus COVID-19 statement as to how they're handling it. I think the ASX might enforce this as well, because why? There has to be transparency in the stock market, Martin. And if a company can say, well, look, we're still out there drilling projects, we're still doing research, we've advised staff that can work from home to work from home. Earnings aren't impacted at all, because a lot of my companies don't have earnings because I buy stocks for a change of behaviour. If they had earnings and were priced for perfection, you're never going to get your 10, 50 bag, 100 bagger. So I see Flight Centre have scrap profit guidance. I mean, how the hell are we going to know what Qantas has done, what it's going to do in the future? I say to clients, dollar cost average, once these things show some signs of the, they call it, the, once the curve flattens, once the rate of infection decreases, I wouldn't go full boil into Qantas yet. I'd dollar cost average. And viewers should remember, this company, this national airline, was almost nationalised when the shares fell to, I think, the high 90s. And then Alan Joyce has turned it around. Virgin have been absolutely smashed in all aspects of the airline business. So, and interestingly, airlines in the States, Southwestern, as an example, increased 100 times in value in 9.5 years. So it can be a fantastic business once all this is cleared. But look, I still think that I think bank stocks could potentially halve again. They're going to have to start raising capital. If you're in the hunt for yield, I'd look towards Telstra, AGL. Woodside got rather cheap due to the oil price as well. But look outside the banks, and I'm sure a large chunk of your viewers have either taken money out of the bank or sold all the bank shares. But I understand that what I do is much maligned. It's not understood. It's all about reading psychology. But I think a lot of the psychology in the small cap speculative area is going to be applied to a house that's 60% overvalued, where you're trying to sell something and there's no buyers, and you have to, once vendors become more realistic, I mean, a real estate agent has to eat. And if they have three sales in a street at 700,000 and you're trying to sell yours at eight, they're going to say, here's the price evidence. And you say, but I'm 200 in negative equity. What? That's how a fragile market collapses. And that's how fragile it is. And once people in the street start to panic, it's all bets are off. And even some of the renowned housing bulls have said, once a recession comes in, all bets are off. And I actually saw Peter Switzer talk about the knock-on effect, and he's virtually used the R word.
I know. Yeah,
well, it's recession.
A few people have changed their tune in the last little while. Look, and the very last thing, a number of people have said to me, look, I've got super, you know, in big superannuation funds, et cetera, I'm quite worried now as to what's happening. It's probably too late to do much, isn't it, other than just sit there and ride it through?
I think that a lot of these funds have returned about 9% per annum, some of the better ones. I think if we've got another 5 to 10% down, once you switch and you go into cash, I mean, shares always outperform over the longer term. Maybe some of the smart people have bailed, have switched into something more defensive, closer to the top of the market. I advise strongly against going out and doing your super fund yourself, because people have been allowed to pump their super and they blow up. They'll start to see no growth and they'll rely on tips and then they blow up. So I think super funds over the long term, if you're in a moderate to high risk fund, you will do well, but I wouldn't be in a fund that's geared heavily towards financials, because I think the bank stocks are going to do a lot more damage to our index. And a lot of people would be worried about their gold and silver. Just remember that the Australian gold price is still $2,474. So it has done its job, but when there's a hunt for liquidity, everything's sold off, and that's the way of the FFD, which is a fundamental free day, as I call it.
And that's really the point, isn't it, Tony, that, you know, there is no such thing as a riskless investment. Whatever you do, there are various risks of various types. And in a downtime, pretty much all investments are going to react the same way. Actually, it's quite important not to get too spooked and basically just do knee jerks, because often the knee jerk reactions are the wrong reactions.
You know, every finance book written by a great investor will tell you not to panic, not to try and time the market. A lot of companies on the ASX are absolute rubbish. The job, if you're an investor, is to work out what the rubbish is, because you cannot apply buffetology and George Soros quotes to a company going broke. It just doesn't work. And look, if I can leave with this point, A spec stock might be 6 cents bid, 8 cents offered. It might be someone willing to pay $600,000 for an $800,000 house. You've got to meet somewhere in the middle. And real estate's an illiquid asset. So I think once someone that isn't colorblind at CoreLogic can start putting out some figures, vendors become realistic, they meet the market, and it's going to get very ugly because we've got unemployment, we've got a population largely in lockdown, and discretionary stuff has gone because suddenly we're a basic society with all these events are being cancelled. I mean, my only stimulus will be getting refunds from three concerts because no one's going to want to do it. So this is interesting times, but it's very scary, Martin. And no doubt you've kept your viewers on top of it. You've done a great service. And I mean, we didn't see this pin coming, but at some point something was going to pop the markets, and it's happened.
Yeah, indeed. And, I should say to my viewers, continue to watch DFA. We will cover this whatever comes ahead. And the fact of the matter is a lot of these issues were predictable, timing not and the catalyst not. But when things are so overvalued as they were, and I'm talking here property and I'm talking stocks, gravity tends to win eventually.
Well, one more figure before I go, sorry. But in that last recession, our debt to income was about 52%. Yeah. Now it's 190. So yeah. We are less equipped and we're less confident in going out and spending. Savers were getting 17, 18% then on a term deposit. Now they're getting 2/5 of sweet FA. So it's not good, Martin. And I'm happy to provide my insights. People got to remember, I'm only an opinion. I might be wrong. So.
Yep. Well, I always value your opinion, Tony. And, people need to make up their own minds. This isn't financial advice. But nevertheless, I do appreciate your time today. Thank you very much. Hang in there. Keep safe. Yep. Keep well. And we will talk again down the track.
Okay. Look forward to it, Martin.
Thanks very much. Cheers. Bye. So there you have it. As always, Tony's perspective on what's going on. Really down to earth, but really full of powerful insights. And we'll be discussing our updated scenarios and what households should be considering in our live show, which will be streamed at 8 p.m. Sydney time on Tuesday. The details are in the comments below. And you can send me a question in beforehand via the DFA blog or ask live via the chat on the night. Mark your diary. This could be one of the most important shows that you've ever watched. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.